Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Family Album, a friendship album story. Florence, November, December, 1934. Chapter 3. Darling, you really mustn't go out to dinner with the hired help, Emmeline scolds Florence the next morning. It's bad enough that you have dinner together at home, but going out together? People will talk. Finn's not hired help. He's an architect and a building engineer, Florence tells her sister-in-law, and then bites into a piece of pumpkin pie. Bess, did you make this? It's divine. Bess nods in Dorothy's direction. It's her recipe. I just followed it to the letter. Did I tell you I finally converted Mama to making pumpkin pie out of a can? Dorothy asks from across the table, where she seems to be debating the merits of pound cake versus lemon meringue pie. Let me tell you, it was no mean feat. Miss Martina does not like change, but she's finally coming around. How is your mother? Bess asks as she pours herself a cup of coffee. Has she recovered from her cold? Dorothy finally decides on pound cake and takes a bite before replying. She finally did, thank you for asking. Mama is hardly ever sick, but when she does fall ill, batten down the hatches. She's like a one-woman opera of woe. This cold is going to be the end of me, Dorothy, she kept saying. It's going to send me to the other side. I told her to tell Daddy hello when she saw him. What did she say to that? Eula, who's smiling at her friend over a cup of coffee, wants to know. Dorothy starts to laugh. She said, if I see him there, I'll tell him, but I'm not positive that's where he ended up. She did not, Bess protests, but Dorothy is laughing too hard now to answer, so she just gives a vigorous nod of her head. Soon they're all laughing and wiping the tears from their eyes. She doesn't really think your father ended up down there, Emmeline insists after the laughter finally subsides. At least I hope not. My father had exactly 2 drinks of liquor in his life, and Mama's never been sure that God forgave him for either one, Dorothy reports to the group, and the laughter starts up again. They spend the next 10 minutes chatting as they enjoy the treats laid out on the table. The pound cake and pies, a basket filled with gingersnap cookies, a plate of cornbread sent over by Eula's daughter-in-law, Elise. A new mother and busy farm wife, Elise is the Bee's most sporadic attendee these days, taking over the title once held by Florence. After the last bit of coffee is poured, Eula, the Wednesday Bee's founding member, leads them away from the table's many temptations and into Bess's living room. I don't know what compelled me to start an around-the-world quilt, she tells the group as she settles into the armchair to the right of the fireplace and takes out her sewing. All I know is that if I don't dedicate myself to it, it is never going to get done. Oh, around-the-world quilts are so charming, Emmeline exclaims, taking a seat on the couch next to Florence, and awfully good for using up your scraps. That was my thinking, Eula tells her. The women in my Tuesday class all want to make scrappy quilts. It's economical for one thing, but I also think it makes it easier to justify their quilting to their husbands. They've got to do something with those old clothes and such, don't you see? It would be wasteful to just throw them away. Florence laughs with the others, but stories like this always make her slightly uncomfortable. She recoils at the thought of having to make excuses to one's husband to justify time spent making a quilt. Of course, one should never be wasteful, but when has a quilt ever been a waste of time or materials? Even the ugliest quilt keeps you warm in the dark. Is that a schoolhouse block? Dorothy asks when Florence pulls her sewing out. There is something so satisfying about row after row of those little buildings. I wonder why that is. Emmeline called it a shaker block in her column, but I prefer to think of it as simply a house block, Florence says as she holds one up so that the others can see. As you know, I'm very excited about my house at the moment. Tell us more about Beau's nephew, the one who's helping you fix things up. Bess wears glasses now when she's quilting, and she looks like a librarian as she peers over them at Florence. You must get along well if you're taking meals together. Florence is careful with her reply. She knows her friends would like her to find romance, even at her advanced age of 28, and she doesn't want to encourage them. If they start teasing her about her friendship with Finn, it might make her feel self-conscious when she walks into the kitchen at night and asks who's ready for dinner. Having Finn and Leo in her life feels like a small gift, one that needs to be held lightly. There's always so much to talk about at the end of the day, Florence tells the group, and Finn will keep working until you forcibly take the hammer from his hand, so little Leo is famished by the time I get home in the evening. And of course, Finn needs to give me a daily progress report before he leaves, mostly because he likes to talk about what he's done and how he did it. He's trained both as an architect and a structural engineer, and it's easy to see that he loves working on the nuts and bolts of a house. We discuss my workday as well, of course. Finn seems to enjoy hearing about how things are going with the quilting company. Anyway, we're both tired at the end of the day, and it just makes sense most nights for us to throw in our lot together at dinner time. Everyone nods, seemingly satisfied by this answer. Florence turns to Bess. What do you hear from Edwina these days? Is she settled in with her daughter? And so the conversation turns to their friend, Bess's former housemate, who moved to Washington, D.C. earlier in the fall to live with family. It's understood by the group, but never discussed, that Edwina left because she felt it best for Bess and her new husband, Joe Mayfield, to begin their marriage without a third adult in the household. Had she been a relative, it would have been different, but she was only a friend and therefore, one presumed, she felt in the way. Only a friend. Florence shook her head at the thought. Friends were the most important things in the world. Now, she happened to think that in this case, Edwina did the right thing by moving out. Women like Edwina walked into a room and changed the weather. Sometimes her presence was refreshing. Other times it blew the magazines off the coffee table and toppled the lamps. All the same, Florence had enjoyed watching Bess and the older woman knit together a different kind of household, and it would have been interesting to see them incorporate a new member into the fold. Florence had read about the Alcott's commune in Massachusetts, but that sort of thing didn't appeal to her, and it came as no surprise that it was ultimately unsuccessful. But clearly there were other arrangements to be had, and for the short time that Bess and Edwina had shared a home, it seemed to have worked well for both of them and for Bess's daughters. As though her sister-in-law could read her mind, Emmeline leans over and whispers, "You can only play family with Finn and Leo for so long. What happens when the job is done and they leave?" Florence doesn't know how to answer this, so she lowers her eyes and concentrates on her needle. She almost says it will be months before the job is done, maybe years. They've discussed enlarging the upstairs bathroom, and Daisy has hinted she would like Finn to build her a greenhouse in the far corner of the lot. But Florence knows to keep these thoughts to herself. They would only prolong a discussion that she doesn't want to have. After a moment, without looking up, she mumbles, "We're not playing family." "Maybe Finn's not playing family," comes Emmeline's quick reply. She leaves the rest of what she has to say on the matter unspoken, but it hangs in the air all the same. You, Florence, are the one who is involved in a game of make-believe. You are the one who will be left alone at the end of it. Chapter 4. The dispatch reporter had spent much of the interview on Tuesday querying Florence about her life as a child, as though she believed the seeds of Florence's current success as a businesswoman were planted in the garden of her youth. Perhaps that's why, for the last two nights, she has had a steady stream of dreams where she and Thomas and Harry are still young, still chasing one another around the house and fighting over toys. In the dream she had last night, she and Harry were arguing over whom the cat belonged to. Florence held the poor animal by the neck, Harry had its tail, and the two of them kept pulling and pulling until the cat stretched out like a length of rope between them. This is the dream she wakes from Thursday morning. What was that cat's name? She wonders as she gets out of bed and steps into her slippers. It had been an old Tom, mean as a snake. She supposes that explains why, in the dream, Florence hadn't objected to the poor thing's torture, though she feels rather guilty about it now. Collecting her wrap from the wardrobe, she wanders into the bathroom, still trying to remember what they called that cat. Oh, they had so many pets growing up. It rather surprises her now, given how fastidious her mother was. Of course, the dogs weren't allowed inside the house, but the cats were. Cats have been the bane of her housekeeper Daisy's existence for over 30 years now. When Florence brought home Tibby a few years ago, the old woman had nearly thrown a fit. "It is just a little fur machine," she'd cried at the sight of the cat. "It makes fur and then spits it out all over the furniture." 20 minutes later, bathed and dressed, Florence is at the kitchen table drinking coffee and planning her day. There are more catalog pages to be edited, and several meetings, including one with the bookkeeper and another with Dorothy, who manages the quilting company's first floor cafe. The cafe has only been open a few months, and they're still experimenting with the hours of operations. A small contingent of wealthy Milton Falls matrons, women with household staff and numerous club meetings, often frequent the cafe midweek, but never before luncheon. Saturdays are the busiest days. Women come to shop and take classes, depositing their children in the third floor nursery and ending their mornings with tea and a piece of pie in the cafe. There's something else she wants to discuss with Dorothy, Florence thinks, making a note in her little book. Perhaps they should open the cafe the two evenings a week Eula teaches. If Dorothy doesn't want to come in at night, surely she could train someone for the job. It could just be serving cake and tea. No baking, nothing too complicated. In the 5 minutes it takes her to drink a cup of coffee, Florence's list of things to do has grown at an alarming rate. She wonders, not for the first time, if she should really be giving 2.5 hours a week to the Wednesday Bee, and then dismisses the thought. She can always work on Saturdays, and often does, though she tries not to let her job seep into Sundays. It's good to take a day of rest, to read novels, drink tea, and write letters to old friends. She is contemplating whether she should pay visits to her brothers this Sunday, something she does once a month or so, when Finn arrives through the kitchen door, a stew pot in his hands. He's been working at the house for 2 months now and no longer knocks. No, that's not exactly right. He taps twice on the door, but he doesn't wait for it to be opened. Why bother when often as not Florence has already left for the day? "Looks like we have ourselves a nice morning out there," he reports, his cheeks red, his gray eyes sparkling. "Cold, but sunny, and not much wind. That's good, because Leo is hoping to do some digging this afternoon. He hopes he can dig under the old oak tree out back, if that's all right." Florence can't help but smile. There's an energy that Finn brings into a room that delights her. He's very American, Emmeline commented after meeting Finn the first time. All of that can-do spirit, don't you find it exhausting? As a matter of fact, Florence finds it invigorating. I think it's fine for Leo to dig, she tells Finn now. Just ask him to not make any holes for Daisy to fall into. I'll have him confer with Daisy before he begins, Finn says as he walks to the icebox. My mother sent over leftover lamb stew for my lunch today, by the way. She says it can be augmented with more potatoes and carrots, should I care to stretch it out for the three of us. She also sends you an invitation for Sunday dinner, but please don't feel obliged to accept. I can always tell her I forgot to ask. The phrase, the three of us, circles in dizzying loops around Florence's head. She wishes it would fly away. It's too intimate, too cozy, like a quilt she wants to wrap herself in. Finn, having deposited the stew in the icebox, looks at her and grins. Really, Florence, don't feel like you'll hurt Mother's feelings if you say no. It's just that you've extended so much hospitality to me and Leo that she wants to pay you back. Pay me back for what? Florence stands and fumbles for her notebook and pencil. Really, it's not as though our dinners are big to-dos. We're just having a bite to eat. Usually courtesy of your mother, I might add. But it's more than that, Finn says. And Florence takes a step back. How is it more? She stammers, not sure that she wants to know. Leo enjoys our dinners here very much, Finn says on his way to the sink to wash his hands. When we don't eat here, we either go to Mother's and Leo gets a lesson in table manners, which lessens his appetite considerably, or else we go home, which is dark and cold when we get there, and it takes half an hour for me to fix dinner. But it's always warm and friendly here. We talk about animals and... Finn starts to laugh. And dirt. And frogs, Florence adds, relieved that this is the direction their conversation is taking. Finn nods. And frogs. You make him laugh, Florence. Leo thinks of you as a friend. In fact, that's how he talks about you. My friend Florence. There is a pause. Finn tilts his head and looks at her as though something has just occurred to him, something that saddens him. It's too bad you don't have children of your own. You'd be a very good mother. The anger that flares up in Florence surprises her with its intensity. Perhaps I don't wish to be a mother, she says, her words tight little fist hitting the air. Perhaps that's not any of your business. Finn pales and then flushes a terrible red. You're right, it's not. And I had no right to say what I just said. Please accept my apology. Florence is already headed for the hallway. Apology accepted, she says over her shoulder. And do thank your mother for her kind invitation, but I'm afraid I already have plans. Please tell her she needn't invite me again. I'll do that, Finn replies, and Florence can tell that now he's the one who's angry, but she doesn't know him well enough to know why. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.